Start from the bottom of Ayin Dalet Amud Beis, three lines from the bottom. But just before we start the Gemara, just to give a little bit of background, because it's kind of in the middle of a topic, the Gemara was talking about different scenarios where if a person, let's say, made a neder, or if a woman made a neder, to what extent does that neder basically void the future possibility of ever getting back together? So if the husband divorces his wife because of some kind of a neder she made, so the Gemara had a whole discussion between, you know, different opinions in the Tanaim, what type of neder will make it impossible to remarry, maybe other kinds of nedarim will make it possible to remarry. So we're going to begin from the third to last line. Amar Rabbi Elazar, lo asru tzarech ala mipnei she'ein od tzarech. This goes back again to the different shitos the Gemara was referencing earlier, where the Gemara had a machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Elazar about whether a person would want to embarrass his wife in Beis Din. In other words, would we say that a person would come to Beis Din and would basically force his wife to dissolve any previous nedarim that she had made? So the Gemara says that according to Rabbi Elazar, technically speaking, those types of nedarim that require what's called chakiras chacham, they need the investigation of a talmid chacham. It's not a simple type of a neder that the husband can annul himself. It's not an obvious type of a neder. So those types of nedarim, we're not worried that, you know, some other people are going to get the wrong impression and they're going to dissolve their marriages based on those nedarim. So technically speaking, if a person divorces his wife because she made some kind of very complicated neder that required a talmid chacham to undo, technically speaking, he should be allowed to remarry her. It was just like zera derabanan because of the more simple types of nedarim that the husband himself can annul, that according to Rabbi Elazar, Chazal said that even in those cases, you cannot remarry your wife. Then the Gemara says, "My time of the Rabbi Yehuda, dichsev, velo hikun b'nei Yisrael, ki nishpu lohem nisiyei ha'ida." So going back again to Rabbi Yehuda's position that was quoted just a few lines ago, Rabbi Yehuda made the following distinction. He says, if the wife made a type of a neder that was publicly known, everyone knew about the neder, and then the husband divorced her because of this very public neder, he's not allowed to remarry her. If the neder was not so well known, and then he divorced her because of it, he would be allowed to remarry her. So the Gemara says, what's the source for that distinction? So the Gemara quotes a pasuk from Sefer Yehoshua that says that the Jewish people swore not to destroy the Givonim because of this shavua that they took, or that the Nesiei Ha'eda took, that the heads of the congregation took. So it was clearly a public neder, and there was no way to undo it. So the Gemara asks, V'chama Rabim, Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak Amar, Shlosha Yomim Shnayim Rabim. I'm sorry, the Gemara says Shlosha, Yomim Shnayim Rabim Shlosha, Rav Yitzchak Amar Asara Eidok Sivu. So there's a machlokas, what constitutes the Rabim? In other words, how many people have to know about this nether to make it qualify as a publicly known nether that if you were to divorce your wife because of that nether, you would not be allowed to remarry her? According to Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, as long as three people know about it. How does Rav Nachman know that three is considered a Rabim? So he references a pasuk from Parshas Metzora regarding a zava. When the Torah talks about a woman who bleeds not during her normal period, not during her normal cycle, the Torah uses the terminology yamim rabim. So the word yamim always means two by definition, and then rabim, the Gemara says, means three. So that's how Rav Nachman knows that at least three people have to be aware of the neder, whereas according to Rav Yitzchak, it has to be at least 10, as we know, because an eda, a congregation, is defined by at least 10. Then the Gemara says, Rav Meir Omer, kol neder shetzarech chakiras chacham lo yachzir, Rabbi Elazar this again was the machlokas that the Gemara on the previous daf was referencing, where Reb Meir says that any neder that it's more complex, that requires a talmid chacham to undo that neder, if a husband divorces his wife because of it, he's not allowed to remarry her. According to Reb Meir, that's me'ikar adin. According to Rabbi Elazar, as we noted before, that's only a gzera derabanan. Really, mi d'oraisa, you should be allowed to remarry your wife in those more complex nedarim. The only reason why you can is a gzera derabanan, because of the more simple nedarim that the husband can annul. So the question is, b'may kamifligin, what's the machlokas here between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Elazar? So the Gemara explains, Rabbi Meir savar adam rotza shet tisbaza ishto bevezdin, Rabbi Elazar savar in adam rotza shet tisbaza ishto bevezdin. Again, this machlokas, which we also referenced back on the previous daf, which is the question of whether a person would want to basically embarrass his wife in Bezdin. In other words, if we force his wife to go to Bezdin, to go to a talmid chacham, to have her neder dissolve, that's going to be considered embarrassing. So the machlokas basically is, what is a husband willing for that to happen? Does he want for that to happen? So that's the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Whereas Rabbi Elazar says that really he doesn't want that to happen. He's not interested in having the marriage dissolved in that fashion. And therefore, the only reason why he can't remarry her is because of this gzera derabanan for the more simple types of nedarim that the husband is able to annul himself. Okay, then the Gemara says, Rava Amar, Hacha Be'isha Chashuva Askinan, De Amar Lo Nechali De Itzar Bekrovo Seha. Rava gives a totally different approach here. Rava says, we're talking about a scenario where the woman he's married to is a very prominent woman, and even though he wants to divorce her, obviously, he doesn't want to now become forbidden to her family. Because if a man gets divorced, so not only, again, obviously he can still remarry his divorcee, assuming that he's not a Kohen, assuming that he hasn't married anyone in the interim, but the halacha is that once you divorce a woman, you're not allowed to marry any of her relatives. So let's say, for example, he was married to a woman from a very prominent family, and he still wants to have associations with that family. So if he divorces her, he's now going to be, he's going to be written off from the family. He's never going to be allowed to remarry into the family, halachically speaking. But if he can find a way for Chazal to basically dissolve his marriage retroactively without really necessitating a divorce, he can still technically marry other members of that family and still be tied in to that prominent family. So the Gemara asks, "Ihachi seifa dekatane aval hu shehalach etzal chacham vihitiru etzal rofe veripeo so mekudeshes lisnei ena mekudeshes velema hacha ba'adam chashav askinan da'amra lo nechali de'itzar bekrive." So the Gemara says, hang on a second. If that's the case, that the guy is still, trying to be tied into this prominent family, why then did the Gemara earlier on yesterday's daf say that, let's say, the wife made a neder that the husband didn't like, and now she's going to the chacham to try and undo the neder? Or she had some kind of a physical blemish that the husband found unattractive, and she's going to the doctor to try and, to cut away or to heal the blemish or whatever. So the Gemara said earlier that in those types of scenarios, the marriage is valid. But why didn't the Gemara make a qualifying statement and say it depends if maybe the woman comes from a chasha family, so the guy is not interested in, cutting himself off? Maybe we can say that the marriage was totally invalid in the first place, so that this way he can still have associations with the family. He can still marry someone else from that family. So the Gemara says, no. Ihi b'chol dehu nechala kidere shlakish. The Amar shlakish tav lemesav tandu mi lemesav armalu. The Gemara quotes a famous idea. This idea appears in a few places, which is that basically women are willing to settle for less. In other words, a man typically has very high standards when it comes to finding a wife. Women are often willing to settle for less. The Gemara coins the famous phrase from Reish Lakish that a woman would rather live together with someone who maybe is of lesser quality than to live by herself. That's Reish Lakish's idea. The Gemara quotes other phrases or other aphorisms that basically echo the same idea. Abaye Amar Deshem Shemana Gavra Kursei Becharas Haramila, which basically means that which is the idea that even if one has a very lowly husband, or a husband is very small, or he has a very not such a chashev job, she still sits like a noble woman. In other words, just the fact that she's married to someone, she treats herself as if she's nobility. Rav Papa Amar Denafsa Gavra Tikriye Besife Bava Vesesev. Even if the woman's husband is a wool comber, which is also a very lowly profession, so she still sits at the door and waits for him to come home, and she's proud of what he does. Rav Ashi Amar Dekalsa Gavra Loboy Talafche Lekidra. And even one whose husband is lowly doesn't require lentils in the soup. Again, the idea basically being that the wife is willing to settle for less, and as long as she's married, she's happy. That's basically the idea. However, the Gemara takes a little bit of a 180 here, and it says, Tana, v'chulan mizanos esolos bevalein. So up until now, it sounded like from the Gemara that all of these phrases, all of these aphorisms the Gemara was quoting, was the idea that a wife is willing to settle, she's going to be happy with whatever as long as she's married. But now the Gemara turns the tables and says, well, actually, the reason why women are often willing to settle for less is because it'll be easier for them to be mizana. It'll be easier for them to have affairs because they don't feel so bad. Their husbands are not so great anyway. Their husbands are lowly wool combers and they don't make a lot of money and whatever. So, okay, so maybe they don't feel so bad about it. So the Gemara kind of turns the tables a little bit with that statement. Okay, then the Mishnah said, Kol Mum...
Yes.
This is more of a Yevamos topic. We spoke a lot about this back in Yevamos about once someone gets divorced, there's still Isurim of Achos Grusha, so you can't marry your ex-wife's sister or again, obviously marrying your wife's sister is a problem even after you divorce her, as long as your wife is alive. But yeah, marrying any of the other relatives that might have theoretically been permitted, right? So in other words, for example,
because
all those arayos are still forbidden. But if you're going to say that the marriage is dissolved retroactively, then you were never really related to the woman in the first place, so then it would be permitted to marry her relatives. Okay, then we said in the Mishnah, Kol Mumin Shepostlin. The Mishnah made an equation between blemishes that basically will undermine a marriage, and the Mishnah kind of equated that with blemishes that will disqualify a kohen from doing a voda. So the Gemara says, Tana, Hosifu Alei and Zeya, Veshuma, Vereach HaPeh. So the Braisa added on three things that were unique to disqualifying blemishes, which is only for women, but not for Kohanim, namely sweat, a mole, or bad breath. Those three things, the Gemara says, are only problematic for a wife. In other words, that's grounds for the husband to divorce his wife, but that would not be grounds to disqualify a kohen from doing avodah. So the Gemara says, really, is that true? V'hani b'chahani lo paslei, v'hasnan, hazakein v'hachola v'hamizuham, usnan, mumenelu bein kvuin bein overin, psulin ba'adam. So the Mishnah says in Maseches Bechoros that there are certain disqualifications that disqualify a kohen who's old, a kohen who is who's sick, or a kohen who's a mizuham. A mizuham, for now, we're translated as a person who's filthy, who's disgusting, The Gemara thinks maybe also it also is the same as being sweaty. So the Mishnah in Bechoros explains that these mumen are problematic in a Kohen, whether they're permanent or whether they're temporary. So doesn't that indicate that some of these mumen also apply to Kohanim? So the Gemara says no. Amar Rabbi Yosi Barabbi Chanina lo kashya kan bezeya overes kan bezeya she'en over. So one distinction is it depends if the sweat is temporary or permanent. So permanent sweat is problematic for a Kohen, but for a woman, even temporary, even just sweating a little bit is problematic. Rav Ashi Yomar Zeya Amazum Karamis Hasam Gabi Kohanim Efshar La'avra B'kiyua D'chamra Umeireach Apen Nami Efshar D'Nakat Pilpala B'fumeva Avet Avoda Ava Gabi Isha Lo Efshar. And then Rav Ashi offers a second possibility, which is that sweat and filth are two different things. Namely, a Kohen is able to temporarily remove his bad breath or his bad smell, because again, the Kohen is not doing Avoda for his whole life. He's doing Avoda at most, let's say, 2 weeks a year, or even just a few days a year, really. So he, you know, for the few times that he does Avoda during the year, he could take some breath mints, he could put some pepper in his mouth, he could, you know, spray some, you know, wine vinegar on him to make the bad odor go away. But if you're married to a woman and she perpetually smells bad, there's no way to overcome that problem. So the Gemara says that's the reason for the distinction. Okay, and then Gemara says, "Hai shuma hichi dami." One of the disqualifications we mentioned was a mole. So what's the case of the mole? Ida is baseyar hacha v'hacha pasla. Idila is baseyar ishuma gedola hi hacha v'hacha pasla. Ishuma ketana hi hacha v'hacha lo pasla. Desanya shuma sheish baseyar harei zemun. Ein baseyar gedola harei zemun. Ketana ein zemun. So the Gemara says like this: that if the mole has hair in it, that's disqualifying both for a woman and for a Kohen. If it doesn't have hair, then it depends. If it's a large mole, then it's disqualifying both for a woman and for a Kohen. If it's a small mole without hair, so that's only going to be disqualifying by the, that's not going to be disqualifying at all. Because the Braisa says that if the mole doesn't have any hair in it, so then it's only problematic if it's large. The Ezuhi Gedola, Pirish Ramashum Ben Gamliya, Ki Isar Ha'italki. What qualifies as a large mole? It has to be the size of an Italian Isar, which is a relatively small coin. So Amar Rabbi Yosi, Barabbi Chanina, the omedes al padachta. The case is where the mole is on her forehead. So the Gemara asks, padachta rav nifayis tu. But if the mole's on her forehead, that means that the man saw the mole and was okay with it, and he was willing to marry her anyway. So the Gemara says, no. Amar of papa, the omedes latachas kipa shorosha, vizimnin de mischazia, vizimnin de la mischazia. The mole was just under the area where she might put her hat or her cap. So in other words, it's not always going to be visible, so there's no guarantee that the man saw it, and now that he sees the mole and he finds it unattractive, that could theoretically be grounds to dissolve the marriage. Okay, then the Gemara says, Amar Rav Chista, Hamilsa migar v'rabi Shmueli, Umanu Rav Shila, Neshacha kelev v'nasa mekomo tzalekes harei zemun. So Rav Chista said, I heard this from a prominent Rav, from Rav Shila. He said, let's say a woman got bit by a dog, and that bite turned into a scar. That scar qualifies as a mum. That's considered to be a physical blemish. Amar Rav Chista, kol ave be'isha harei zemun, shene amar ki kolich harei v'mareich na'aveh. A woman who has a deep voice, who has like a baritone voice, that also qualifies as a mum. The Gemara references a pasuk from Shira Shirim that talks about the beautiful voice of a woman and her beauty. So if she has a deep voice, that's also considered a blemish. Okay, and then Gemara says, Tani,
yeah. Heard this before.
Yeah. I mean, presumably, if he heard it and he was okay with it, maybe, I don't know, he's only meeting her for the first time when they're getting married. I don't know, that, you know, maybe that wasn't so uncommon back then. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Tani Reb Nasan Bira'a, Bein Da De Isha Tefach. Comes the Gemara and says, Gemara has a little bit of a cryptic statement, that the space between a woman's breasts is a tefach. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? Sava Rav Acha Berei De Rava Kamei De Rav Ashi Lemeimar, Tefach Lema'al Yusa. So Rav Acha thought that that was a positive thing. In other words, if there's a tefach of space between the woman's breasts, that's considered to be beautiful, and that's considered to be, you know, basically the opposite of a blemish. So Amar Le Rav Ashi, Gabe Mumen Tanya. The problem is that statement was made in the context of Mumen, things that are disqualifying. So the Gemara says, V'cha The Gemara says that basically what's considered to be the perfect amount of space between a woman's breasts is three fingers width. So anything larger than that is considered to be a mum. Tanya Reb Nasan Omer, Kol Isha She Dadeha Gasin Mishel Chavroseha Harei Zemum. A woman whose breasts are larger than regular women's, that's considered to be a mum. The Chama Amar Rav Meisha Barberei De Rabbi Yehoshua Ben Levi Mishpei De Rabbi Yehoshua Ben Levi Tefach. So comes the Gemara and says that's a tefach. So breasts that are larger than a tefach are considered a mum. So asks the Gemara, Mi Ika Ki Ay Gavna, do breasts even ever get that large? And which is in the Amar Rabba Bar Berchana, Ani Raisia Ravya Achas Shehev Shila Dadel Liachorev Einikas Bina. So Rabba said, I saw this Arab woman whose breasts were so large that she slung them over her shoulders and she nursed her child that way. Okay, then Gemara quotes a pasuk from Yeshayahu, Ul Tzion Ye Amer Ish Ve Ish Yulad Ba Vehu Yechonenecha Elyon. Tzion. It says that for, this is a pasuk from Tehillim. It says that for Tzion, each person said, I was born there, and it's going to be established. So what does that pasuk mean? Amar Rav Misha bar Barei de Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, Echad hanolad ba, the Echad hametzapel lerosa. So the word ish, the ish, and the pasuk in Tehillim are referring to two different types of people. One is a person who is born in Tzion, born in Yerushalayim, and the other is a person who anticipates seeing it. Amar Abai, v'chad minayu adiv kisrei minan. One person who lives in Eretz Yisrael is considered to be the equivalent of two people who live in Chutz La'aretz. Amar Rava, v'chad minan kisolik lahasem adiv kisrei minayu. However, a person who moves from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael is considered to be twice as good as a person who's born and lived in Eretz Yisrael their whole life. The Harabi Yirmiya, d'chiyah v'hacha lo hava yada maikamri rabbanan, kisolik lahasem karlam bavloi tibshayim. The Gemara proves this from Rabbi Yirmiya. When Rabbi Yirmiya lived in Bavel, so the rabbis had no idea what he was talking about. He used to ask, the Gemara points out in several places, that Rav Yirmiya used to ask these very, very technical questions, and the Rabbanim, used to kick him out of the Beis Medrash a lot, because they had no idea what he was driving at, and then once he moved to Eretz Yisrael, his intellect shot up to the point that he was making fun of all the Babylonians, and calling them foolish, and calling them stupid, and whatever. So you see that when you go to Eretz Yisrael from Chutz La'aretz, your intelligence increases. Okay. Says the Mishnah. Hayu ba mumin va od... Yeah, yeah. Question?
If a woman has one of these mums...
Yeah.
Retroactively.
The assumption is that, again, assuming that the husband is not obviously okay with it, right? Things that maybe he couldn't have known about, didn't know about before. We're going to get into more of those details in a second now in the Gemara. But
for such a woman, could she marry a Kohen?
Yeah, she could, because if in fact the marriage is dissolved retroactively, that's not considered a divorce. So yes, she would be allowed to marry a Kohen in that case. Yeah. Okay, so says the Mishnah. Hayuba mumin va'oda b'veisaviya, ha'av tzarech lahavi raya, sheminis arsa hayuba mumin halalu, v'nestach v'sadeyu, nichnasa l'rishos habal, habal tzarech lahavi raya, sha'ad shalonis arsa hayuba mumin elu, v'ya mikchol mekachtos divri reb meir. So comes the Mishnah with the following. The Mishnah says that basically it's going to depend on when, in other words, at what point did the woman develop these movements. So if the blemishes developed while she was still in her father's house, her father has to prove that the movement only developed after Erison. In other words, let's say, for example, the couple was dating and the woman had no physical imperfections. They get engaged, and then after, again, this is after obviously halachic Erison, after Erison, it turns out that she has, blemish X, Y, and Z. So if in fact that blemish only develops after Erison, that's the husband's problem, because that blemish was never there before, and there was no mekachtos, there was no mistaken purchase. She actually did not have that blemish, and the blemish developed after Erison. That's going to be on the husband. That's his tough luck. So the father has to prove that the blemish developed only after Erison. However, if the girl is already in the husband's house, and now he's claiming that she had some physical blemish that he was unaware of, he's going to have to prove that the blemish developed prior to Erison, and she didn't disclose it, and the whole marriage was considered null and void. That's Remeir. V'chachamim omrim, v'med dvarim amurim, v'mumin shebes So come the Chachamim and say, this is all assuming that we're talking about, the concealed types of blemishes that the husband would not have seen until they were married. If the blemish was out in the open, it was on a part of her body that anyone can see, so then, of course, it's going to be, the husband's tough luck. He saw the blemish and he was okay with it. If there's a bathhouse in town and the woman can go to the bathhouse and be inspected by the husband's female relatives, so then even the concealed mumin, he doesn't have a tain on, because he could have asked his female relatives to go and inspect her to make sure that she didn't have any physical imperfections. Okay, so says the Gemara, taima de maise ha'avraya, halo maise ha'avraya habal meheman. So the Gemara says the only reason why, in the case where the woman, let's say, develops the physical blemish after Erison, but she was still in her father's house, we said the father has to prove that the blemish happens after Erison, so the Gemara says if the father doesn't bring a proof to that effect, then we believe the husband that the blemish was there, from before Erison, and the whole marriage is null and void. So the Gemara says, "Mani Rabbi Yoshua he da'amar lo mipia anuchayin." That seems to reflect Rabbi Yoshua. That was a sheet that we quoted way back on Daf Yud Beis, the famous machlokas between Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Gamliel about a case where basically after a couple gets married, so the husband says that the woman was raped, prior to Erison, and she didn't disclose it, whereas the woman claims, "I was raped, but it was after Erison. It's your tough luck that I'm not a basula anymore, and you still owe me the full value of the ksuba." So according to Rabbi Yoshua, we don't believe favor. We rely on the husband unless the woman or the father in this case can prove that the rape actually happened after Erisin. So the Gemara says the problem is Ema Seifa, Nichnasa L'Rishos Habal, Habal Tzarech L'Havi Raya. Taima De Maisei Habal Raya, Halo Maisei Habal Raya, Ha'av Meheiman, Asan L'Rabban Gamliel, De Amar Ne'emenes. The problem is that the latter part of the Mishnah said that once the woman is in the husband's house and now she has a mum, so the husband, it's incumbent on the husband to prove that the mum developed prior to Erisin. And if he can't prove that, then we believe the father that the mum was there actually after Erisin, and it's the husband's tough luck. But that would seem to conform with the opinion of Rabban Gamliel back on Daf Yud Beis, where he said that we do believe the woman. So how could you have one Mishnah that reflects two different opinions? So the Gemara says you could. Amar Rabbi Elazar Tavra Mishushana Zo Lushana Zo. There are two different statements. The first half of the Mishnah was authored by Rabbi Yehoshua. The latter half of the Mishnah was authored by Rabban Gamliel. Then the Gemara says Amar Rava Lo Tema Rabbi Yehoshua Lo Azla Basar Chazaka Degufa Klal Ela Kilo Azul Rabbi Yehoshua Basar Chazaka Degufa Hecha De Ika Chazaka De Mamona Aval Hecha De Leika Chazaka De Mamona Azul Rabbi Yehoshua Basar Chazaka Degufa Disanya Im Baheres Kodem Leseir Lavan Tamei Im Seir Lavan Kodem Levaheres Tahor Safik Tamei V'Rabbi Yehoshua Amar Keha My Keha Amar Rava Keha Tahor. Comes to Gemara with the second answer, says like this, that don't think that Rabbi Yehoshua, again, who's the opinion back on Daf Yud Beis, who says that we never believe the woman when she says that she was raped after Erisin and it's the husband's fault, it's you know, it's his tough luck that I was raped, or in this case the mum developed after Erisin and it's your problem, you know, the marriage is still valid, so we never believe her according to Rabbi Yehoshua. So comes Rava and says, don't think that Rabbi Yehoshua ignores the concept of what's called a chazaka de gufa, which is basically the woman's previous presumptive status, because obviously at a certain point the woman was not yet raped, at a certain point the woman did not yet have this physical blemish. The only question, of course, is, well, when did that status change? When did she develop the blemish? When was she raped? Was it prior to Erisin or after Erisin? That's the issue at hand. So the Gemara clarifies, don't think that Rabbi Yehoshua always ignores the woman's previous presumptive status. That's not the case. The only time that he ignores it is when you have an opposing, what's called a chazaka de mamona. When on the other hand, you would basically have an issue of trying to extract money. So what, in other words, what exactly is the fight here between the man and the woman? So the man is trying to claim that the whole marriage should be dissolved. The whole thing was a mekach taos. And the woman is saying, no, it's your tough luck because I developed the mum after Erisin, or because I was raped after Erisin. So this is a fight over money. They're fighting over whether she should get a ksuv at all, or in the case of rape, whether she should get 200 or 100. So the Gemara says, because there's a chazaka de mamona, the woman is trying to extract money from the man. We have a famous principle in halacha, hamotzi mechaver olav araya. The woman has to prove that, in other words, if she wants to take the man's money, she has to prove that she was raped after Erisin, or that the mum developed after Erisin. And if she can't do that, so then the husband's going to win. But it's not to say that Rabbi Yehoshua denies the principle of what's called chazaka de gufa, of the woman's previous physical presumptive status. It's just that you have an opposing cheskas mamon going up against that. And the Gemara proves that from a case regarding tsaras. There's a din that if, let's say, you develop what's called a baheres. A baheres is like a white leprous spot. So there's a distinction depending on whether the hair developed before the baheres or developed after the baheres. In other words, if the baheres comes first and then the hair, that's tameh, that's considered tsaras. If the hair first, then the baheres, that's tahor. But what if there's a suffix? What if you're not sure whether the baheres or the hair developed first? So that's machlokas. According to the Tana Kama, that's tameh mi suffix. That's suffix do'oraisa l'chumra. But according to Rabbi Yehoshua, he says keha. Keha literally means that it's dull, which the Gemara says that means that it's tahor. So you see that according to Rabbi Yehoshua, there are scenarios where you go back to the previous presumptive status by the guy who maybe is a mitzora. We say that he's not a mitzora because we're not 100% sure whether this is considered tsaras. The only time he denies the idea of a chazaka de gufa is when it's going up against the cheskas mamo. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Rava Amar, Reisha ka nimtze uvechan hayu, seifa nami ka nimtze uvechan hayu. Rava gives a very straightforward answer. Rava says it basically just depends on where the blemish developed. So right now, in the case where the woman is at her father's house, so the presumption is that the physical blemish developed while in her father's house. And if you want to prove otherwise that the blemish developed, you know, once she was in the husband's house, you're going to have to prove that. So wherever the woman, you know, physically resides right now, whether the father's house or the husband's house, that's going to be the starting point. That's the baseline assumption of where she developed the mum. Then the Gemara says, "Esi ve'abaye nichnasa l'rishus habal habal tzarech l'havi raya sha'ad shelo tisareis hayu bamumin elu v'hayu mikcho mekach tos ad shelo tisareis in misha tisareis lo v'yamai lema kan nimtzu v'chan hayu." So the Gemara pushes back on this interpretation. The Gemara says, "But didn't we say in the Mishnah that once the woman goes into the husband's domain, so now it's the husband's job to prove that the mum developed prior to that the mum developed, you know, before Erisin, and therefore the whole thing was a mekach tos." So the Gemara says, okay, so if in fact you can prove that it happened before Erisin, so we say that the marriage is null and void. But the question is, why should that be so? Why don't we say that right now she's living living in the husband's house, and the assumption is that the mum developed while she was in the husband's house. So the Gemara says, no. Amar le misha nesarsa, mishum de'ika lememar chazaka enadam shosa b'chosa le'imkein bodko, v'hayra v'nifayesu. The Gemara says, because we have a presumption that a person does not drink out of a cup before they inspect it. In other words, the guy is not going to marry the woman until either he or maybe his female relatives, you know, do an inspection and make sure that she doesn't have any physical blemishes. So the fact that he saw her and he decided to marry her anyway meant that even though she had certain physical imperfections, he was going to marry her anyway. And he was mochel on all of those. So the Gemara then says, okay, ihachi achelo tisareis nami. If that's the case, that the husband saw all of the imperfections and was willing to marry her anyway, so then why does it matter if the mum develops, you know, before or after erisin? Either way, the marriage should not be able to be dissolved if the husband consented to marry her. So the Gemara says, you're right. Ela amrinan chazaka ein adam yifayis b'mumin. Hachanami chazaka ein adam yifayis b'mumin. The Gemara says, we have a presumption that the husband is not willing to be mochel on a mum. In other words, unless we know definitively that the husband was staring the mole in the face and he said, I'm going to marry you anyway. In other words, anything short of that, we say, you know, we assume that men are a little bit more superficial when it comes to looks. If they see anything that's a little bit off, so then they're going to say that we're not willing to marry the woman. So the Gemara says, you're right. Ela misha nesarsa, mishum di'ika tarte. Chazaka hamid haguf al cheskaso, v'chazaka ein adam shose b'chos ela imkin bodko, v'hai ra'av v'nifayesu. So the Gemara says, there are really two things going here. The first is that you have to rely on the previous cheskas haguf, which is that up to a certain point, the woman did not have this blemish. The blemish only developed at a certain point. Now we're trying to figure out, when did that blemish develop? And the other thing is that the husband is not going to marry the woman unless he first inspected her. So those two things together, the fact that the woman did not have a blemish up to a point, and the fact that the husband would not consent to marrying her before inspecting her, would lead us to believe that the blemish only developed after erisin, and that's why the husband agreed to marry her in the first place. So the Gemara says, "My Amar Chazaka in Adam Yifayis B'Mumin Havichadim Kom Tarte V'Chadim Kom Tarte Lo Amrinan." So the Gemara says that even though on the other hand, you have this idea that the husband is not willing to forego any physical blemish, that's only one chazaka. But on the other hand, you have these two chazakas: the fact that the woman probably did not have a blemish, you know, up until the moment that we know that she did, and also the fact that the husband probably had someone inspect her to make sure that she was free of blemishes and agreed to marry her, that leads us to believe that the blemish will develop later. So the Gemara then says, "Adjlo tisaris hamid haguf al cheskaso lo ika." The Gemara says, "Lo ika lemeimar." So the Gemara says, but you can't say that prior to erisin, you go back to her previous presumptive status and assume that she never had a mum. So the Gemara says, "Ma'ika chazaka de enadim shosa bechos ela imkein bodko v'hayra av nifayisu." On the one hand, you can argue that the husband had his female relatives check her over to make sure she had no blemishes, and the fact is that he married her anyway. So if she had blemishes, he must have consented to marry her anyway. But adarabah chazaka enadim nifayis b'mumin v'hamin mamon al cheskaso. But you have an opposing cheskas mamon, which is that the husband is not going to give in to any physical blemishes, and therefore you have to go back to the previous presumptive status. The woman is now trying to demand that the husband pay up her ksuva, and the husband is saying, no, I'm not willing to do that, and in fact, the marriage should be dissolved. So then the Gemara says, Rav Ashi Amar, Reisha Manala Abba Biyarcha, Veseifa Mana Libiyarcha. Rav Ashi gives a different distinction, which is that the first case in the Mishnah is a case where the claim is that the father has the money, whereas in the latter case, it's the case where the woman herself has the money. In other words, in the first case, where she's still in the father's house, the taina is between the husband and the father, or the future father-in-law. The second case, where she's in the husband's house, the fight is between the girl and is between the woman and the man, or you know, themselves. So because of that distinction, you can say that because in the first case the claim is not against the girl, so that's one reason to distinguish. And the Gemara says, "Esiv Ravacha Bereid Rav Avil Rav Ashi Moda Rav Meir B'Mumin Haruuyin Lavo Ima Mi Beis Avia Shaal HaAvla Havi Raya V'Amai Manali Biyarchahu." So the Gemara says that Rav Meir agrees that if there's a type of a mum that's normal to develop on a girl when she comes to her father's house, that's incumbent on when she comes to the husband's house, that's incumbent on the father to prove that mum only developed later on. But the question is, why does the father have to prove that? Why is that not a case that's similar to manali biyarcha? Once the girl is in the husband's house, so then the fight's only between her and the husband, not between the father anymore. So the Gemara says, no, hacha b'mayaskina b'yaseres. We're talking about a woman who has an extra toe. So the Gemara says, yaseres, my raya maise. The Gemara says, raya derav nifayeh. So the proof that you need to bring in a case of a woman who has an extra toe is to prove that the husband knew about it and was okay with it anyway. So the Gemara says, if you can prove that the husband was okay with the extra toe, so then the marriage is going to be valid and there's no way to dissolve the marriage in that case.